of Cosmos with Cosmos.
Hey, we made it! A century's worth of Cosmos.
Yes, we get 100 episodes. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you in a month.
Goodbye.
Bye, everybody.
Yeah, good episode.
It was great. So, for our 100th episode, instead of talking about a recap of 199 previous episodes.
Oh. Let's
talk about a dude who made a lot of this possible.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
William Herschel?
Close, but no. One Sir Isaac Newton.
I knew it.
Hey, Isaac Newton.
Yes, Mr. Isaac Newton. We're going to talk about him today. We're going to talk about newts.
Okay, all right.
All right.
Newty Newts. It doesn't feel the same.
No.
When I was putting this together, I literally wrote down brief biography at the top. It is gone because it is all nothing but
all
there
biography.
Is so much to Newton. Mm-hmm. You can make it two episodes easily.
Oh
yeah. Well,
I mean, there's so much.
This is a special extended edition of Cosmos with Cosmos.
Very, very condensed.
He's a man of all sorts of things.
Yes. All right. So before we do it, what's everybody drinking? What are you drinking, Liz?
I am drinking Liquoroscopy.
Okay. That's a good name. I respect that. She kept it secret from us, so we didn't know beforehand.
Well, it doesn't show as well on the camera, but it was kind of like a spectrum of liquor that was happening with my. Technically, it's a New York sour, so it's bourbon, lemon juice, red wine, an egg white, some orgeet because we're out of simple syrup. I'm assuming.
Yeah, that's it.
And then I'm going to stir it because it was been sitting for too long, so the lemon juice has done an extra separation there.
That
so,
happens.
But when you combine all the light together, you get white light. So you get a continuous spectrum. So it's a continuous liquor spectrum. Anyway, Brandon, what do you have?
Speaking of white lights, I have Impure White Lights.
Hey!
Hey! We'll talk about that later. But last night I tried to channel my inner Jack. I finally got a food processor and I'm very excited about it to make my little purees and sauces and things. Mm-hmm. And so I actually put some raspberries in there and some other things and made the raspberry puree and put it into a White Russian. But the lemon juice coagulated and it got clumpy like cottage cheese and eventually terrible. Mm-hmm. So I nixed that today, but I tried. I tried, Jack. I really did.
It was a good effort, I would say. You'll refine it. Maybe you need to sieve the puree and then
or just take lemon juice out.
Take the lemon juice out. Yeah.
Mike, so what you got?
Well, Jack's got mango bubble tea.
Ooh. Yummy.
Yeah, I don't have my contacts in,
I like
so
tea.
I think that says bubble.
Yes, it does.
I am drinking the Fluxions.
Hey, Fluxions.
Mm. Yes, because that was one of the names that Newton gave to his calculus shit that he came up with.
Called it Fluxions. It sounds very Star Trek.
I got it. If we ever made a band, we would just be called the Fluxions.
The Fluxions. I like it.
I mean, to me, it sounds very much. Oh, I have, vanilla vodka, brown sugar, cinnamon syrup in there, a little bit of that.
Uh-huh.
Ginger beer, and topped off with apple cider. So
how's the mouthfeel?
It feels good. Feels good.
It's good mouthfeel.
Mouth feels good.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So, oh shit, I forgot what I was going to say. Oh well, doesn't matter. It's probably something about Fluxions.
My mom's got her standard Earl Grey with lavender. Hot.
Very nice.
Nice. It's nice. It would be a good day for a hot drink because it's been raining all day and all day yesterday.
Yeah, we have some sort of atmospheric river that's just plowing through.
Atmospheric river. I love that phrase.
Yeah, so that's our life for next few days, but for next 14 days, nothing but rain. All right, follow us on all things on Twitter because I refuse to use the other thing. Drinking Cosmos and on Instagram, Cosmos. Follow us and rate us anywhere you get your podcast.
Anywhere.
Don't forget to join us for The Hangover directly after this episode. If you have a chance and you're on the old interwebs, check out Wild Ixia, Wild IXIA on Etsy. Got really cool stuff. In fact, we bought some stuff from there. Check out Ron Proctor with the MrProctorShow.com. And, of course, Jack over at Rolling Bluffs Planetarium in the Council Bluffs, Iowa area, RollingBluffsPlanetarium.com. Check it out. Visit your local planetarium if you are not in the Council Bluffs area. We just recorded an episode of The Shot, so check that out every other Wednesday.
1.5 times.
We did. We had a little issue with it. We got a new one coming out this Wednesday, right?
Yes.
Okay. Either this Wednesday or the next Wednesday. Got one coming up. Up. And, of course, we have rules. So, if a puppy barks, or, well, I'm not going to do wines. We'll be drunk in 5 minutes.
Yeah, I can't.
A puppy barks, take a drink. Star Wars reference, take a drink. Lord of the Rings reference, take a drink. Let's get into it. Talk Newton.
And really quick, I just the preamble here. I discovered before this episode that if you replace the name Amadeus with Isaac Newton, it works in a song. Isaac Newton, Isaac Newton, Isaac Newton.
Oh, rock.
Yeah. All right.
So with that in your mind.
Nerd. All right. We'll start in the early years.
The early years.
Yeah. If we go back in time.
All right. Here's the thing about the date that Newton came into the world and exited the world.
Oh.
England was on a different calendar.
Why?
Yeah, because they hadn't gone to the Gregorian yet.
Okay, the Gregorian is what we're currently on, right? They're still looking.
So, all of these dates that I'm generally giving are going to be Gregorian.
So it's not just time, but dates are also relative. Okay.
Yeah. Yes. So he was born on January 4th, 1643. If you want to do the Julian, it was December 25th, 1642.
Jesus.
1640 year. Very good year.
Newton is Jesus.
Oh, shit. Gotta take a drink already out of the gate.
I didn't do it, though. I didn't finish the quote. It doesn't count. I'm just saying it's a good year.
Yeah, but I know what you meant. I know exactly what you meant. You had a grin on your face. that is the same year that Galileo died. So Newton came in as Galileo.
Maybe he's Galileo.
Passing off the torch.
Yes. All right. So he was born at Woolsthorpe Manor. I included this because the names are just classic English names.
It's English, okay.
Woolsthorpe Manor in the Woolsthorpe by Colsterworth in Lincolnshire.
I mean, how cool is that to be born in a manor, though?
I know, right?
Born in a manor.
Well, not that kind of manor, but yeah.
Not a fancy manor? In Woolsthorpe by Colsterworth in Lincolnshire?
His mom had a shit ton of money, but refused to spend her shit ton of money.
Oh, so, smart lady.
So basically, they were sitting on money. Anyway, his parents were Isaac Newton, who he's named for.
Senior.
And Hannah Aiskoff. His dad died 3 months before Newton was born.
Oh no. Yes. So she's a single mom.
Yes. He was premature also.
Oh my God. And he lived and she lived back in the 1640s.
But it was kind of a rough delivery.
Well, are there any that aren't
rough?
Yeah.
In the 1600s? I don't especially, think
especially. No, there's no epidurals.
No.
Until when? The
70s? He was so small, his mom said that he could fit inside a quart mug.
What's a quart mug? Oh, it's like a quart. A quart.
Oh, they come in quarts?
They come in.
Oh.
Oh,
I gotta be honest, though.
How
if you hadn't said
that?
It, I was gonna say it. All right.
So wow, it's amazing that.
Mom remarries at 3. And
Newton is 3 years old.
Not the mom.
Well, I mean, it was old timey days.
Wow. Yeah, you're popping up babies by 2 and a half.
The mom remarries when Newton was 3.
Uh-huh.
And she leaves to go live with her new husband and ships him off to her mom's house.
What?
So Newton goes to live with the grandparents. But it actually ends up being a good thing for Newton in that there was an uncle that would go a lot, and he introduced Newton to books.
That would go a lot?
To the grandparents' house.
Oh, okay. Or an uncle, an uncle would visit a lot.
Okay. Okay. And he would bring books, and in fact gave Newton all his books, and that was a kingly gift.
A kingly...
To quote Gimli.
Let's do this. Let's dive into this. Let's really lean into the Lord of the Rings references today.
Alright, so... and so, basically, Newton kind of dives into books and all that kind of stuff.
Which was convenient, because at the time... Oh, sorry. I might steal your thunder slightly here. But he was, like, destined to be a farmer, but he really didn't like it at all. So the uncle coming in...
We're getting into that!
I know, I got excited.
He was going to be a farmer?
Okay, we're going to get into that.
Oh my god, okay. Books, Jesus everybody. Christ. Read your books. I should make a note of that to myself.
That's
too late at this point. My brain's already dead.
Newton hates his stepdad. To the point where when he's 19, he has listed sins, and one of the sins that he listed was, I want to burn my mom and stepdad and then burn the house above them.
Set them
on fire and then, you know, burn the house. God.
This kid needs counseling.
Well, to be fair, his mom basically left him when he was 3.
But that was like a normal thing in that 1600s. Just to drop off.
All right, anyway. The same.
Stepdad dies.
Oh, okay. Well,
he goes out eventually.
Wait.
We hear him.
Really quick, Newton wants to kill his stepdad, and the stepdad dies. Is there a correlation here?
No.
What happened?
No correlation is not equal causation.
All right, anyway. At the age of 12, from 12 to 17, he goes to the King's School, so a ritzy school. He gets sent off there.
Okay.
So he's there, and let's see, where do I have it? Oh, yeah, no, I have it in here. He's bullied quite a bit, and his idea of revenge on the bully is to become the top-ranked student.
Oh, that's...
I'm going to defeat my bully by getting extra thick glasses.
I will be valedictorian and put that bully in his place.
He was. He distinguished himself at King's College by... making sundials and models of windmills. So
this doesn't.
And
okay.
I mean,
what a dork!
What gave it away that Isaac Newton might have been a dork?
One of the descriptions for him basically is that he is a massive introvert. And anytime he got bullied, it actually made him go even further into himself.
How many windmills are there?
But he was also very nerdy.
I really hope we talk more about his personality as well. Because, whew, my goodness, he's an interesting guy.
All right, so...
I just need a bottle of windmills.
So stepdad dies.
He kicks the bucket.
Yeah, he kicks the bucket. So mom brings Newton home to have him become what, Brandon?
A farmer! Like a farmer maggot!
Oh, do we?
I told you we were leaning into it.
I always thought Farmer Maggot was a human until I found out later he was a hobbit.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier. Yeah.
All right, anyway. He hates it. He hates it, hates it, hates it.
Well, yeah, because he's a brain person. He wants to use his brain, not his hands.
Are you saying farmers don't use their brains, Liz?
All right, anyway. Different. Hangover. The headmaster, though, convinces the mom to send him back.
Oh, okay, like, hey, this kid, he's smart. We need him, and he needs to get an proper education, not be out in the fields.
Yeah, so he finishes up at the King's School, and he now goes off to college.
Oh.
Cambridge University.
Damn.
Ooh. Yeah, so he starts Cambridge in 1661 at the age of 19 years old.
Okay. That's about the right time to start college, right? 19?
Yes, typically. Okay. Yeah.
So he... He did not have a scholarship or anything like that. He had to pay his own.
Wow.
She did not pay.
She wasn't going to pay for this amazing education.
So he had to work through college until he got a scholarship. Wow. So for the first couple of years, he basically was a valet to other students.
Carrying their books for them?
So he's like 2 years older than some of these students, and he's having to be a valet to them. Because he But wow. Then a couple of years into it, he gets a scholarship.
Can you imagine looking back, thinking, "Oh, that Isaac Newton? Yeah, he used to carry my books for me."
Right?
Yeah. All right. So, in 1665, he discovers the generalized binomial theorem, which is a way of if you have like X plus Y, and that is raised to, and these are variables, and they're raised to an exponent. It's a way of solving it.
So he just happens upon this.
Yeah. I think he happens upon it, but...
Yeah, and he starts working out at least what will eventually become calculus. This is
okay, so this was already a thing. This is the binomial theorem was already a thing.
Both. Yes, he generalized it.
And he was like, let me take a deep dive into this.
So basically, the binomial theorem at that point was something like, if you have X plus Y raised to the 2, raised to 2.
Okay, okay. Yeah.
And so they're able to figure out that. Uh-huh. He made it so that you could put any exponent in there.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, it just popped into
his brain. He was like, hey, here's this math problem. And then he was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
We can do this better.
So this is in 1665.
Yeah.
He's 22.
There's no calculators. Point. Well, no. Other than like an abacus?
No, it ain't. Well, maybe.
Abacus
eye? I don't know. I don't know if that made its way to... I don't know. Anyway.
No Texas instruments.
Okay. August 1665.
No Texas.
Cambridge... shuts down because of the plague.
Well, that'll happen too.
Well, yeah.
You know, plagues will do that. I mean,
before the plague happens, Newton has not distinguished himself at the university.
So he's just middling.
He's just an average student. That's all he is.
You know, I mean, you know, if COVID happened, if it was still 1600s as time and COVID happened, it would also be a plague, I would say.
Well, I would also say...
Okay. All right, this all right, is all, right, hangover, all, right guys. All right, all
right, all right. I just wanted to jump in for a moment.
All
right. Okay.
All right, so Newton goes home. So he is home for 2 years.
Two years.
Yeah, so he goes home for 2 years, and... I'm sorry, I just read what Brandon put in the... what he added or somebody added to this. All right, so he goes home, and while he's at home, he further develops his ideas on calculus. He develops ideas on optics and begins the initial thoughts of his theory of gravity.
Wait, before you get to this last thing, this other thing that's going to make funny. But calculus, but he develops calculus. So he's just starting to develop it, or...
Yeah, I mean, all this is when he doesn't really develop
calculus. He's just starting, he's brainstorming. Yeah. He's brainstorming what will become a calculus.
Yes, yeah.
And it's not just calculus, it's also... fucking gravity? Are you kidding me?
Where's the apple? Has he been hit by the apple yet?
Okay, well, that's a different story.
Okay, all right, now, all right. But what's he not thinking about?
Instead of thinking of girls, which is... All right.
So I was watching a documentary on Newton, and they mentioned, well, instead of thinking of girls, he was devising calculus and a theory of gravity, and I thought that was funny.
Yeah, he was such an introvert. Mm-hmm. He really had a hard time... with just talking to people, let alone the opposite sex, if that's what he was interested in. And in fact, there is debate. Even Carl Sagan has talked about he died as a virgin, and I'm like, who gives a fuck?
Yeah, good for him. I mean, whatever. He developed calculus and fucking... Yeah,
girls are icky anyway, so it's fine.
They are, yeah.
No, don't touch me.
Yeah, I know. Please, of course.
Quickly, circle, circle, dot, dot.
All right, anyway, so he...
the cootie shot.
All right, so he returns to Cambridge, 1667, having worked out all this other shit.
Having just being a genius at home. Oh my God. Just like, in my spare time.
Back, yeah, and he comes back like a superhero.
Here's some new math.
So, I mean, the plague is a defining moment. For Newton, because you have pre-plague and you have post-plague for Newton.
Christless.
before the plague, Newton middling, not making a name for himself.
Yeah.
He comes back. He graduates with a Master's of Arts in 1668 at the age of 26. 1 year later, becomes the Lucasian Professor of Mathematics in 1669 at age 27, which is one of the most premier positions to have in the entire world.
Because he thought of calculus? They knew he came out with calculus? Has that been come out yet?
He has written letters to the current Lucasian.
Like, hey, I want your job, bitch. I'm coming for you.
No, his name is Brown. I can't remember his first name, but his last name was Brown. Brown then writes to other people and says, basically, this guy's a genius.
And should take my job.
basically, Brown wants to dedicate himself more to religious studies. Oh, and so he gets Newton in there.
Brandon has a question from the class.
So I have a question. It's more a comment than a question. So I was reading, the position is called the second Lucasian chair. Do you know why it was the second, not the first?
I probably left out a few words. He was the second person to occupy the Lucasian chair.
The first guy was Brown.
Does that mean that future holders that I'm sure Mike will talk about are called like the sixth chair, the eighth chair?
I don't think it's like the Dalai Lama, but
that's a great way to put it.
I think that they just call themselves the Lucasian professor. And other people that have held it have been Paul Dirac, held it from 1932 to 1969. Mm-hmm. Paul Dirac came up with a great mathematical way of doing quantum mechanics. Mm-hmm. Stephen Hawking also held it from 1979 to 2009, so for 30 years.
Wow.
Jesus.
And of course, in the future, Data. Data holds it.
Data!
It took me a second to remember, but yeah, it's when Picard has to go back in time in the last two episodes of Next Generation.
Yes.
And Data is...
After he retires from Starfleet in an alternate universe.
Is it fair to have an android? Yes.
And he dyes his hair like a skunk.
it looks quite good on him.
Data can pull off anything.
Yeah, and so...
Including his face.
And so Newton is in that chair, and he holds it for something like 33 years, until 1702.
At 27 years old.
At 27 years old. I know, right?
So take a drink.
All right. So this is... All right, so I have basically three bullet points that really kind of talk about his big things that he did.
Okay.
They're big bullet points.
Well, yeah, three bullet points with many sub-bullet points beneath it.
First is calculus.
Oh, yes, okay, calculus. I'm sorry, I don't know what it is. I've never taken it. I know there's lots of letters, and is this where the squiggly lines come in? How do you go from A plus, or 2 plus 2 equals 4 to let's just throw in some squiggly lines and some letters and we get some shit come out of it?
No, we're going to get you there.
All right.
I love this so much.
I mean, we're going to get you there in the future. Not in this podcast. We're going to learn you some calculus. We're going to learn you
okay.
Up. Okay. That sounds fun.
That would actually be kind of interesting if you try to teach me calculus. I have, like, homework and I, like, graph paper and turn in assignments.
All right. What's really interesting, though, is that calculus had to be invented so that Newton could come up with his theory of gravity. Without calculus, you cannot have his theory of gravity.
Crazy.
Yes.
But...
You can come up with an equation. You can say, all right, this is the equation that describes how gravity works.
Yeah.
But you cannot fully understand what is happening and why.
He just basically took numbers and put them into submission.
With calculus, you can say why the apple falls straight. Because this is actually one of the things that Newton... He questioned.
Uh-huh.
So when an apple falls from a tree, why does it fall straight down and doesn't go sideways? Cool. Why doesn't it go back up, directly up? Why does it always fall down directly towards the ground, in essence, towards the center of the Earth.
Did he get hit on the head with an apple?
We'll talk about the apple. But okay. So it falls straight down. You have to have calculus to describe that.
Okay.
For such an easy concept that we think of now, of course things fall down, but he had to invent this whole other field just to explain why things fall down. I love that.
So he basically invents calculus, and the first time that it's mentioned is in a manuscript in 1666. He's 24 Ooh. Fucking years old at this point, 23 years old. That is important for later.
Oh, okay.
he called it fluxions or calculus, and
so he just came up with calculus.
What?
He just came up with calculus.
The name?
Yeah.
Yeah. He also came up with the name spectrum.
Really?
Oh, yes. Okay.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
My mom asked, "Does it include mass, momentum, and velocity?"
yes. Yes, it does. I mean, because yes, it does. Well, or not mass. It does not include mass.
But momentum and velocity.
Momentum, yes, because you really need instantaneous velocity. Down, so
I feel there are some laws that we're going to talk about later about. All right. That.
Yes, but velocity, yeah. If you want the instantaneous velocity, which means you'll get the instantaneous momentum, you do need to have calculus for that. So, anyway, he was reluctant to publish it. He did not publish calculus for like 2 decades.
Wow.
That's a long time to sit on in math. Yes. Just like, I know shit that nobody else knows, and I'm just going to hang on to it for a bit.
Well, the thing is that somebody else eventually started to know it.
And he was like, wait a minute. So I knew this first.
Pretty much. And he feared controversy and criticism, which really makes me go, this dude's human.
Think he was human,
but he feared. I mean, he didn't want to be criticized, and he was worried that
it's a new thing. Yeah, it's hard to put yourself out there, especially as an introvert.
And considering his disposition, of course, he's not Galileo who just goes willy nilly to the Vatican.
Yeah, he was just like Galileo.
So he finally publishes calculus in a much larger book called Principia. But right.
Put that shit up on Twitter and let the world have at it.
Yeah, so that was in 1687. He was 45.
Really quick, how was he paid? Do I have the story right? Am I thinking of something else?
Is he paid?
Well, he was probably paid. I don't know how he's paid.
If I remember the story correctly, and maybe I'm sure like Jack will correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm fairly certain this is the one. Oh, he published it, and the publisher can actually pay them.
He couldn't pay the publisher.
Oh, he can pay the publisher.
To publish the work.
We're
going to get into that.
Okay.
Newton did not pay to have it published. Somebody else did.
Somebody paid for him?
We're going to get into who?
I'll cover your tab.
We're going to get into who?
Okay.
So we can come back to
it. Is it someone we know?
It is somebody you know.
It's someone we know.
All right. So the big controversy, though, was that there was another dude, Lymenes, who also... at the same time, quote unquote, developed calculus.
Right. This is why you gotta publish, because whoever published first wins.
Yes. There was a big debate. Who did it first? Was it Newton or was it Leibniz who did it?
To the
point where the Royal Society of England wrote they debated it and they wrote up this whole document about who actually invented calculus. Of course they say Newton. Mm-hmm. But also here's the kicker. Newton wrote the conclusion of that paper in which he called Leibniz a fraud.
Wow, Newton.
And basically that he plagiarized Newton's thing. Now, when we do calculus today, the notations that we use are Leibniz's notations. They're just easier to use.
Okay, so it's really, did Newton technically start thinking of it first?
Yes, he did. Okay, right. And this is where that manuscript comes in handy, because it's 21 years prior.
Oh, so he can just be like, here's the proof of my work. Like, yeah. See, this is why you show your work in math class, everybody.
And so, you know, a lot of historians say Leibniz and Newton came up with it roughly the same time, but they all agree that Newton did it first. Mm-hmm. Because at this point, saying it the same, they did it the same, it's 400 years ago. And so it's roughly the same time. Yeah. You know, and so, but we do use Leibniz's notation, but Newton called him a fraud in 1711. So it was, and he plagiarized me.
Wow. Well, so you're muted, Brandon.
But we're going to learn you some calculus.
I had a number of good quips in there. That's okay.
Is he real?
It's a day of muteness.
It really is. All right, so that's calculus. Calculus is really important. Math was his love, but he also did love, obviously, physics and stuff like that. I mean, he was considered a natural philosopher, which is, I mean, he was mathematician.
Right.
He did stuff with physics.
Right.
And all
this is, I mean, we're in, like, scientific revolution.
Yeah,
that's
kind of the catch-all is a natural philosopher. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's change gears.
All right. We're leaving math behind. Goodbye, you fucking
numbers and letters.
Letters and squiggly lines that mean shit.
Squiggly.
Optics.
Hey, I see you.
1666.
Ah, the year of the devil.
Very good year.
Just use it again. Reuse it.
All right, Newton observes light is made of a spectrum.
I like this that he's just like hanging out. He sees like a light beam, and he's like, hey, I wonder what makes that shit up. I wonder if there's anything going on with that light.
All right, so here's the thing. Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm quickly reading through, make sure you don't mention this. So he observes the spectrum, but that's not how he first tried to make these observations. So before he put light through a spectrum, he took, what was it, not a needle, like a tiny, basically needle.
God, yeah.
And put it betwixt his bone and the eye to make these observations.
Wait, what?
In honor of him, I have here a metal thing, and I'm going to...
No, you're not. Because...
He took basically like a needle and stuck it between his eye and his bone and moved it so his eye could observe the things. Yeah.
Yeah, basically changed the... He wanted to know if you change the shape of the eye, will it change... Does it affect color?
Yeah. And that's not... I'm sure you'll talk about this as well, but that's not the last time he uses his own body and health to try to make scientific advances.
All right, so... but how he did it was with just light. Was he made a little hole in the wall, and a beam of light came in. Prior to Newton, the thought, and I think this came from Aristotle, was that light was either white or black, or somewhere in between.
Black light.
Yeah.
Yeah. White was pure.
Yes. Of course it is. It's so from the angels. It's
that's
the
what
angels.
The spectrum was. And it's, so it's... what Newton did was he... so the question becomes, where's this freaking all these colors come from, right? And so...
Right, but so this is where he's like, he's seen a rainbow and he's like, what are these...
So he has the beam of light. Uh-huh. He comes in, that comes into this dark room, uh-huh, and he passes it through a prism, right, and that separates it.
And we get Pink Floyd.
And you get Pink
Thank
Floyd.
You.
You're welcome.
I'm wearing
my rainbow NASA shirt because
nice.
I was like the light through the prism. I don't have a Pink Floyd shirt, so.
And so he was able to see that that the light splits into colors, but also he was able to see that depending on the color, it would bend more or less. Go ahead.
It was a spectrum. Sorry. Because I got excited about he made that word.
He invented.
So red light bends the least.
Yeah.
And blue light or violet light ends up bending the most.
Because red light has the longer wavelengths.
Right. And then when those colors shown in the wall, he took another prism and put it against the colors to see what they were made of, and it was the same light. So it was just white that was made up of all these different colors. The other colors have made them themselves.
Was rainbow a term yet?
Oh, I'm sure it was.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure. It's in the Bible, right? That's thousands of years ago.
Oh, right. Yes, it says what? Know, rainbows are gay.
Also, what he did was, this is a little bit later, but he split the light, mm-hmm. and then he took a lens mm-hmm. and another prism, and he recombined it into white light.
Oh, that's such an engineering mindset.
Yeah, and so he was able to recombine it.
I just don't know how people think of these. Like, wait a minute, let me get a prism. Let me get a piece of glass that's a triangle. And then let me put the light through it and see what happens. What? Did he try different shapes of glass? Like, you know, tried like a pentagon shape.
Oh, a dodecahedron shape?
Yes, exactly. You know, or a common cube. Did he try a cube? You know, see if that works. Did he have a glass maker make these? Or can you just buy them at the ye olde shop?
I don't know.
I have a whole thing about about ye, anyway.
All right, so he's done all of this by the age of 30.
God damn it.
All right, so... But it doesn't end there with optics.
Of course it doesn't.
He, based on his observations with mirrors and lenses and all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. Newton made the first reflecting telescope in 1668, age 24, to counteract refracting telescope's inability to bend all the wavelengths or colors into a single point. It's called chromatic aberration.
Yeah, because with a glass lens, you'll get a little bit of like a blue and a yellow, I think.
So he said that refracting telescopes would never fix that, but now they have eyepieces and stuff that do. Mm-hmm. And so... Right. So you can do that, but he invented a whole new type of telescope. Yeah. And it was smaller. Mm-hmm. And it gave better image quality mm-hmm. than the lens telescopes. Like he would get with Galileo.
To get a perfect glass lens shape, that glass is going to be heavy. It's got to mm-hmm. be, you know, bigger. Whereas a mirror, you can just, now it's like a mirror film almost that you just kind of can put on. But it's easier to make it more of a perfect convex shape that you need.
Nice.
He developed the Newtonian theory of color. Basically, that he was the first to figure out that, so white light will hit like a blue ball. And it absorbs all the colors mm-hmm. except for that blue. The blue reflects off of that ball.
And that's why you see it as blue.
And that's why you see it as blue.
Right. And that's why the trees are green. Because they're reflecting the green light.
Yeah.
And we see them as green. But on another planet, they could be purple. It just depends on how the shit works. All yes, right. Brandon.
Thank you, Liz. So we have the Newtonian theory of color. We have Newtonian, non-Newtonian liquids and things, fluids. Did Newton make the phrase Newtonian? Or was that put together later?
It's put together. It's later.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
he wasn't.
This is Newtonian, everybody.
It's not like Hawking. It was like, oh, I'm going to call this Hawking radiation. Newtonian.
I don't even think Hawking probably called it Hawking radiation.
Stephen radiation. Okay, so my point of reference for Hawking radiation comes from a Futurama episode. After he says Hawking radiation, he calls it, I call this a Hawking hole. Thank you for having me.
All right, so Newton believed light to be made of particles. He was one of the first to
think about light as a particle.
However, 200 years later, James Clerk Maxwell, Scottish dude, showed that light was a wave. Uh-huh. And then quantum showed it was both.
It can be both.
And it was dose.
However, Newton's idea of what a light particle is and Quantum's idea are very different.
Well, yeah, because Newton obviously couldn't conceptualize quantum yet.
Could you imagine though if he did?
Oh my god. Can you imagine going, I would love to go, this is another reason why I want time travel. Go back in time and bring Newton something like quantum.
Just blow their minds.
Oh, he would have a nervous breakdown.
Or just bring him recording of this episode talking about him and be like, what do you think about these people in the future talking about you?
Oh, nothing but bad opinions.
All right. Principia and the Invention of Classical Physics.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Hell yeah.
So, in 1679, little dude named Robert Hooke.
Little dude. Did he have a hook?
No, but he did. Is he a captain? He did have a hook back. It was.
He has a hunchback?
Hunchback, yeah.
A hook back? I've never heard it called a hook back.
Well, because I have hook.
His name is Hook. He's got a hook back.
Well, you're like, does he have a hook finger?
He's got a hook back.
And then I couldn't think hunchback.
He's the modern Quasimodo of the 1600s.
Right. And so.
Now, isn't that one Quasimodo? Anyway.
I don't know.
Anyway, Robert Hooke said. Contemporary. Sent Newton a letter asking for contributions. Now, I was like, are these like intellectual contributions or is this contributions for money? But anyway, Newton starts considering celestial mechanics at this point.
I love that.
And so I guess it was intellectual contributions.
Not monetary.
Yeah. So
I would like everybody's intellectual contributions.
Please. Right. So he starts thinking about celestial mechanics again.
Okay.
And so he had taken a break from it.
When was he thinking about celestial mechanics before?
When the plague was happening.
And he was just like, I'm going to think about.
Just wondering.
Yeah. Of course. But he didn't have the mathematics
right.
to be able to really.
He had to think of calculus first. Okay. All right. He's like, wait a minute. Something's not adding up. I better make that.
So by 1684, Newton had already worked out the inverse square law.
God damn it.
And what?
So by 1984, he worked out this incredible thing. Like, what we need to ground Isaac Newton is for, like, Shania Twain to go back to the 1600s and goes, so great, you worked out the inverse square law. That don't impress me much.
I mean, I'll take a drink of that.
That was a nice niche Shania Twain.
Anyway. He had worked out that it was inverse square law, and it would account for elliptical orbits.
Oh.
So, Kepler.
So it validates Kepler's whole thing.
Yeah, so Kepler has already said.
The math was already figured out for elliptical orbits.
Kepler had figured it out, yes.
Oh, because of one of
Kepler's laws is that it's elliptical. But that's because that's all based on observational data.
And not math?
Well, you're going to need math to figure out this in ellipse.
Right, because Kepikeps wasn't great at math. That's right.
But it does not give a theoretical framework in which to describe it. So all you're doing is saying, hey, the planets go in an ellipse, which is what Kepler did. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. And then Newton comes in and says, this is why. Yeah.
This is why. Okay. He put an equation to it. No, Keps was good at math. It was Brahe that wasn't good at math.
I got that mixed up. You're completely right.
Yeah.
He also works out his three laws of motion.
Okay, are we getting to the apple?
I'll do the apple with this. But all right, so he works out the apple. All right, so he works out the three laws of motion, which become the basis of classical mechanics. So describing how things move.
Newtonian physics. Right.
It would be great if he did. That would be awesome. All right, so the three laws of motion are law number one.
Yes.
An object will remain at rest or move with constant speed and in a straight line unless acted upon
about an outside force.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, very good. All right, so I love that they do put in that Newton felt the need to put in an object will remain at rest or move with a constant speed, because technically a speed of zero is still a constant speed. So you could actually say an object will move with a constant speed. Mm-hmm. In a straight line unless acted upon by force. You don't need to at rest. But that's just a nitpicky part.
Yeah.
That's me being nitpicky.
So anything's going to stay where it is, or it's just going to keep moving as it is.
You're going to continue to move.
And fucks it up.
Until something acts on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
That checks out.
In a Einsteinian kind of way, this is the special theory of relativity.
Right, like this microphone in front of us right here, like it's just hanging out, but if I just do that, then it moves.
Right, but the thing is there is no system anywhere that exists in the universe where you do not have something being acted upon by a force. Because gravity...
Gravity's always there! Gravity's always happening!
Yes.
Gravity's happening everywhere!
So this is kind of... This is like a very in-the-weeds kind of thing. But if you had to think of Newton and Einstein and Einstein's relativity, then this first law is special theory of relativity. It says we ain't going to worry about gravity. We're not going to worry about it at all.
So did he just... He Einstein before Einstein.
Yeah, but Einstein perfected it.
Yeah.
All right, so law number two.
Two!
Force equals mass times acceleration. Technically, though, he didn't write it as force times mass. He didn't say that force equals mass times acceleration. Mm-hmm. What he said was force is equal to... the differential of mass times velocity. So
did
if you have what?
He said midi-chlorians.
I did.
Oh, all right.
That's what F equals.
Right. So basically, he says Principia that force is equal to momentum changing with time. So momentum is. And this is what I had this long conversation with your mom about earlier this week.
And my mom would text me back. Okay.
I even wrote it up on a piece of paper and sent her a picture of it. But anyway, so velocity is a vector.
Okay.
So it has a magnitude, which is called speed. Basically, how fast if a cop pulls you over and says you're going 60 miles an hour, that's the speed, which is the magnitude of the velocity.
Wouldn't it be 60 miles per hour they pulled me
No,
over.
That's true.
But since
it's a vector, it also has a direction that it's going.
Okay. Yeah.
And so a force can change either the speed, so it can slow it up or speed it up.
Change its vector.
Or change its direction.
Uh-huh.
So here are two examples. Okay. So friction slows it down.
Okay.
So you're rolling ball, friction acts against the direction the ball is going, it slows it down and brings it to a stop eventually.
Right.
But, and we actually talked about this the other day, yesterday I think, you brought up the bucket.
There was roller coasters involved and I was thinking of Cosmic Coasters.
The bucket, yes.
And there's a little bucket.
So if you fill a bucket, all right, what I used for your mom was a string and a ball.
Okay.
So, if you have a ball, and it's on the end of a string, and you're just swinging it around over your head, that ball is going at a constant velocity, but it's constantly changing direction.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's being acted on by a force. Uh-huh. That force is the tension in the string.
Mm.
And so, there's two ways to do it. And then, if you want to really throw in a curve ball, rockets. Because you're changing mass with it. And
got
so... So mass is not constant. We usually think of mass as constant, but with rockets, mass is constantly depleting.
Yeah, because you're losing all that mm-hmm. fuel that's coming out.
Yes. Law number three. If two objects exert a force on each other, then the force is the same strength, but in opposite directions. So if I push on your knee is pushing back on me.
No.
Another way of saying this is that, in other words, you can't touch without being touched, but we all know you don't really touch anything because of quantum physics.
Quantum physics later goes, hey guys, wait a minute.
There was a fun comic I was reading and some explanations of math afterwards. It showed a butterfly in a jar on a scale, and the butterfly on the scale said like 0.05 grams. And then the butterfly took off in the air, and the scale read zero, which isn't what actually happened, because the butterfly, with its wings, is exerting a force onto the jar itself, so it's still weighed the same, because of the air pressure onto the bottom.
Yeah, but, okay, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm not crazy?
No, the butterfly would weigh the same, yeah. That's what they call the butterfly effect.
So later on, Liz is going to edit this part out.
I'm too lazy to do a lot of edits.
All right, so he comes up, I mean, Principia is his massive intellectual masterpiece. Exactly.
He stood as a stone.
It's got, I mean, he actually wrote a second book called Optics, but it has calculus, which
no one likes to see
which in and of itself is a intellectual tour de force. Mm-hmm. But Principia's got
it's got all the big ones.
It's got calculus. It's got
your favorite hits.
Of motion. Yeah. It's got gravitation.
Five singles in one book.
Edmund Halley.
It was Edmund Halley contemporary?
Yes. Yeah.
It's hard to place all these people in different time frames, you know, because they're all so far in the past that you don't know when who existed with the others.
In fact, it is Edmund Halley that convinces Newton to get it published and then pays for it.
Go Halley!
Yes. And it's published
with that comet money. No, I'm just kidding.
It's published on July 5th, 1687. Newton is age 45.
And can I talk about the publication for a second? Because this is kind of a fun story.
Yes.
So Halley financed it, and he was part of the, what do you want to call it, the foundation, the fellowship, the society that published it. However, those people, they ran out of money. And so even though Halley financed it, it made a lot of money. And so they could not pay Halley in actual money. So instead, what they did is they paid him in a book, in copies of a book called the Historia Piscium, which is a history of fishes. So the Principia paid out its residuals in a book that nobody bought about fishes.
What? Okay.
Yeah.
So this is all that came out of Principia.
Okay.
Gravity.
What?
Laws of motion.
Holy shit.
Calculus. Analytical calculations of the speed of sound and air.
How?
Keep going.
He took Boyle's law and was able to analytically calculate the speed of sound and air.
Is Boyle's law why we call boiling boiling?
No.
Oh.
It's spelled differently. Oh. Inferred the oblateness of Earth. So the Earth is wider than it is
at
tall.
Its equator. Yeah. Okay. So it's like flat. Most of the planets.
He provided a method for determining the orbits of comets and eventually planets because Neptune was discovered.
Neptune.
Fucking Neptune.
He actually, within it, started looking at the irregularities of the moon's orbit.
Oh, ooh.
He was able to explain tides.
You can't explain it.
We don't know how they work, just like them and magnets.
He explained precession.
What? And wait, we already had that, though, with Hipparchus.
Yeah, he talked about it, but he didn't explain it.
He didn't explain it. It's like Kepler.
It's a nice deep cut right there, Liz.
Whereas Kepler and Hipparchus and everybody,
they're like, this is happening. This is happening.
Newton
said why. Okay. Yeah. All right.
And utterly destroyed the geocentric model.
Boom! Fuck that geocentric model.
So sure. Aristotle. He did all that, but what have you done for me lately?
But technically, and he actually points this out in Principia, it's not heliocentric either.
What? But it is.
No,
but
it's not. He...
What?
But it's a very subtle thing, but it's true. It's a very subtle thing. So if it's the heliocentric model, then you are orbiting around the exact center of the sun. That's what it means, right?
Oh.
But you're not.
What?
You're orbiting around the barycenter, the center of mass of the entire solar system.
That's not in the center of the sun, because the sun is 99.9% of the mass of the solar system.
But the center which all the planets orbit.
Is it just right outside the sun?
It is just outside
of the center
of the sun. It's not too far.
But you have the barycenter. And the way I just realized, you can remember it, is it's very close to the very center. I never put that together. God damn it.
The very center is close to the very center, but it's not the center.
So that is Newton's scientific career, but he goes on.
Why stop at 45?
Right.
Why stop?
Right. So just quit real quickly.
Why retire now when you've rechanged all of the cosmos?
He served as a member of parliament.
Oh.
Twice.
Sure.
In 1689 and 1701 for 2-year terms. But the only thing of note,
two things of note.
He complained about a cold draft and requested the windows be closed.
All right, fair.
Wait. Now, isn't that like one of the, like the only time he actually spoke up? Like that's the only thing he said.
What is an introvert doing in Parliament?
Well, he's an introvert.
Yeah,
he represents Cambridge. So he represents Cambridge there. Anyway, but also he rebuked some students who were scaring locals by claiming a house was haunted. I think it's great. It's great. Two things.
Let them have their haunted house. Everything's haunted back in the 1600s.
He does all this other shit that's just like, oh, way out there, right? And so, just amazing stuff. Intellectual tour of form. Yeah. So, you might as well just kind of just take it down
that.
A notch.
Just give I have a question. This isn't a relevant question.
I can answer the question.
But, yeah, okay, if today's ghosts are all from the 1800s, when were the ghosts of the 1600s
from?
That's
a good question. That's a really good question.
Well, it depends what country you're in, right? Like, for example, in England, you could have the old Roman ghosts.
Okay, all right.
Oh, so that'd be cool.
Like, yeah. Trajan's walking around, they'd be like, oh, this used to be such a great wall, and now it's been diminished.
You just get, like, togas, floating togas everywhere?
Yeah, that'd
be great.
So, 1696.
Very good year.
Fucking shit.
You might as well get used to that button, because...
Oh, well, I'm glad I made this button. It makes it much easier to press.
Newton becomes the Warden of the Mint.
The Warden of the North? Nice. What?
Mint. Yeah.
Mint.
That was a Game of Thrones reference.
Like the Andes.
In 1699, becomes the Master of the Mint.
The
very good.
Master of the Mint.
The Master of the Mint.
Keeper of the Gold and Silver.
Wow. Who knew a Les Mis reference would come into our show?
Yeah, right? See, that's the one we're
it's
really
taking my favorite
care.
Les Mis song, though, is Master
of the Mis. It is Master of the Mis.
25th anniversary edition. Watch that, everybody.
See, when I hear that song, I just like to look down. Anyway.
Look down. All right, 1701.
That was a good.
Newton retires from Cambridge, gives up his Lucasian chair, and goes after the counterfeiters. Because he's gonna lean into the Master of the Mint.
Is he like Batman?
He's gone, yes.
He actually serves in the Mint, basically, until he dies. For the next 30 years.
Why? He's doing all this shit, but really quick.
I do want to point out in the notes that Mike has, he would go into disguise to bars and taverns.
I was just
going
to say
Oh, shit, I'm sorry. Continue.
He took it very seriously. It was basically an honorific role, but he took
How
it.
How old is he now? Do we know?
This is 1701, born in, 1642, we'll say, 1643, so at this point he's 58.
All right, yeah, that checks. He's, past middle age, so he's like, I care about money.
So he wants to go after these counterfeiters, right?
Very frugal.
And he would go into disguise... In bars, maybe also, and taverns, and pubs. Go ahead, Brandon.
But can you imagine? He would be the most obvious person in disguise. Like, he can't fit in. He's not ordering drinks. He's sitting there in a corner, like, just looking at everybody. Because he can't fit in. That's what he's doing.
Yes, okay, so...
Why can't he... I mean... Is he a recognizable figure?
Well, that's why he's going in disguise.
It's not about being recognizable. It's not about being recognizable, I think. It's just about his disposition.
He needs to look like a drunk.
So, when I was in college, 1987, this is...
Very good year.
Oh, Jesus. This is right before Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. So this is in November of 1987. Uh-huh. I go to a bar. Mm-hmm. Was not intending to drink. I was going to go hear the Bodine's play. Uh-huh. And
you're not legal to drink yet anyway.
I was not old enough to drink. Yeah. No. And so there were in South Carolina... there's like a quote-unquote police force called ABC, which is Alcoholic Beverage Commission, and they send people to bars, and if they see somebody who's drinking underage, they don't arrest them, but what they do is they find the bar. So they're all about finding the bar.
Oh, okay, all right. It's like when Simon Pegg and Hot Fuzz goes into the bar,
so,
and it's like, hey, all right.
February 22nd.
But every they year. Are there... at a table, there's two of them, uh-huh. suit and ties, at a Bodine's concert. The Bodine's opened for U2 2 weeks later. Uh-huh. And that was really the reason why. I actually got a drumstick from the drummer.
Do you still
Where
have
is it?
I do not still have
why?
It.
Why?
Because I've moved 5,000 times.
What? You?
That's a story for the Hangover.
Okay.
Right. And so, but anyway. Uh-huh. Yeah, so I'm sure Newton looks like ABC at that bar, Long Street Theater.
Like, look at that copper.
anyway, he cross-examined 100 witnesses, informers, and suspects,
wow.
and successfully convicted 28 counterfeiters. Now, here is the, I didn't put this in notes, but here is the, what happens to you in 1600s, 1700s England for counterfeiting.
Oh,
it shit. Is considered high treason. You are hung, drawn, and quartered.
So he got 28 people killed?
Holy shit.
For just counterfeiting money? Right.
Yep.
Not get murder?
Get me Netflix. I have a great idea for a series.
I mean, but also, how easy is it to counterfeit money back in the 1600s?
Now, it doesn't mean that the judge was like, okay, we're going to do that to you guys, but that was what happened to them.
I mean, I feel like anything, any crime back in those days is basically either a hanging, a drawn and quartered situation.
Or a tarring.
A stoning as well.
Stoning. It means something different now, but
different,
yes.
Different than...
Anyway, he was knighted by Queen Anne in 1705.
Oh.
Okay.
We've been missaying his name this whole time. It is
Sir.
Isaac Newton Jr.
Just like Sir Patrick Stewart.
He died.
Exactly.
Ian McKellen.
He died March 31st, 1727. He's buried at Westminster Abbey. In fact, was the first scientist buried there.
Wow.
Had a death mask made of him.
Jesus Christ.
And the Royal Society has it now.
We're on display? Can you see his death mask?
Yeah. Well, there's pictures on the internet. Mercury was found in his hair, probably from alchemy. What? We didn't talk about it. But he did a lot of alchemy.
He did a lot of alchemy.
Alchemy was big during the time. Hangover.
Let's do it in Hangover.
But alchemy was big during the time.
But it's a big thing.
You know.
Yeah, because actually 10% of all his writings were dedicated to alchemy.
Yeah, it's not just for the Full Metal Alchemist.
So clearly not successful. Not successful. at it, but
no, because it's not a real thing.
So there are basically
anybody's going to prove it would have been.
It's true.
Sorry, Mike.
There are 10 million words that are attributed to Newton's writing. 10 million
that
words.
Are new words? That he invented words?
No, you know what I mean.
Oh.
No, that he wrote.
That he wrote.
In his writing.
He wrote 10 million words?
10 million words attributed to him. So this doesn't even count the shit that didn't get published.
It's cold today. But this is the good shit.
1 million of which are dedicated to alchemy. So it was a big part of his life.
Oh. Well, you know, it's the 1600s.
It's a science. You got to prove it wrong and prove it right.
True.
But to be fair, at the time, alchemy was called chemistry.
Okay.
All right.
So it makes sense.
Yeah.
He was doing what he thought was chemistry, but he's trying to...
Right.
Make something into, you know, gold or
right.
whatever.
I mean you can't blame the guy.
It's logical, you know, and back then, why not try and make gold, not understanding that gold can only come from supernovas.
Right, so, you know, in today's world,
nice.
It is hard for us to put ourselves, like, in Newton's shoes or, you know, at the time.
Yes.
Because we have this wealth of information
that
we can sit upon. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're like, oh, alchemy.
Fucking dummies.
I know, right? I know, right? However.
What a fucking dumbass. Trying to make gold.
Sometimes science can be a bitch.
But at the time, though, you know, you it's baby steps. You have to get.
Yes. What do you have to stand on?
All right.
That's what I was getting to, Liz.
I know. I'm segueing.
All right. So he actually he's a complicated person. In ways, he can be vindictive and all that. But he was also, in some ways, very humble.
Uh-huh.
And so he does say in a letter to Robert Hooke, there is actually a little bit of debate about this, but if I've ever seen further, it is by standing on the shoulders of giants, which can be taken two ways.
Okay.
So, the way that we kind of see it now is that the reason why he's able to come up with gravity and all that kind of stuff is because he's able to stand on the shoulders
he's
of Kepler's
Galileo. Using the work of others that have allowed him to...
But however, however, at the time, he's in a feud with Robert Hooke when he writes this letter.
Oh, who's Robert Hooke? Just quick.
Robert Hooke was the guy who was like, why don't you contribute? And that started the road down
Why don't you contribute?
Well, he didn't publish it.
Oh, before he published.
Right. Okay. And can you contribute to the Royal Society? Okay. And that is what led to Principia.
Oh, gotcha, gotcha. Okay.
So without Hooke, you kind of don't have Newton.
Gotcha. Okay, okay, okay.
But they're in this kind of back and forth.
Well, it's like Batman and the Joker. Yeah.
And so there was at Cambridge, there was a professor or whatever, a poet. He wrote that if you have a giant and a dwarf, and the dwarf is standing on the shoulder of the giant, the dwarf sees further than the giant.
Yes. Better and than so, too deep. You have to drink, Brandon.
So, there is a school of thought that it was a dig at Robert Hooke. But the problem, though, the problem is that in this scenario, Newton is a dwarf.
He wouldn't have had all positive then unless he had everything behind him.
All right, so
I mean, he's allowed to have a little bit of an ego, though.
All right, so this actually is from a memoir of Newton.
Oh, okay.
Can he do it? Okay, pretend you are Isaac Newton reading this aloud.
Oh, I can't do that. I can't do that. So no, because I really, to me, I actually like this quote better than the shoulders. All right,
do it from your heart. Do it from your heart.
Yeah.
I do not know what I may appear to the world, but to myself, I seem to have been only like a boy playing on the seashore and diverting myself in now and then, finding a smoother pebble or a prettier shell than ordinary. Whilst the great ocean of truth lay all undiscovered before me.
Oh, wow. So it's like, hey, I'm just noticing these little things, but there's so much unknown.
There's a whole undiscovered country before me. No, I really like that quote, actually. Yeah. Star Trek references aside, I really like that quote.
I do like this. And so, I mean, basically...
That's a humble statement.
And basically, he's also saying, I'm just like a little kid, and I saw this pretty thing.
I'm just playing around. Because all little kids are exploratory. They're all trying to learn things, you know.
I love it.
So, I do want to read his gravestone.
Oh, yes.
Ooh,
please.
Yes. Love it.
So, he was the first scientist that was... buried at Westminster Abbey. Westminster Abbey is the burial place for kings and queens.
Yes.
Jesus Christ.
Yes. I mean.
All right. So on his tombstone, here is buried Isaac Newton, knight, who by a strength of mind almost divine and mathematical principles peculiarly his own, explored the course and figures of the planets, the path of comets, the tides of the sea, dissimilarities in rays of light, and what no other scholar has previously imagined, the properties of the colors thus produced. Diligent, sagacious, and faithful in his exposition of nature, antiquity, and the holy scriptures, he vindicated by his philosophy the majesty of God mighty and good, and expressed the simplicity of the gospels in his manner. Mortals rejoice that there existed such and so great of an ornament of the human race. He was born on the 25th of December, 1642, died the 20th March, 1726, last 27.
Is even the then, slash on the there? Day. Is the slash on it?
Yeah, even then they don't know the date.
Wow! It was last week, but who's to say what year it is? But in total, though, what a great epitaph. That's phenomenal.
Meanwhile, my right. epitaph will just say, I wasn't supposed to be here today.
But mine's going to say, lover of dog Jack.
You know, Jack. There's just, like I said, there's so much. Uh-huh. There's so much to it. Like, we didn't even get into his religious views. He was a devout Christian.
Of course he was.
But he has some really unorthodox views.
Yeah, because he can think bigger than religion. So he's like, well, I'm going to believe in this shit because I'm supposed to. But I have some thoughts.
I was about to say, you know, religion in total takes into view the whole universe is not much bigger. But then Newton literally imagines things bigger.
He invented a whole new way of
math. He invented
a way of looking at light.
All right, so he invented math.
All of math.
We didn't know what book one was.
Pythagoras.
That's why we call this. That's why math's called Newtonian math. That's his full name.
He invented calculus. Uh-huh. So that he could invent gravity. A theory of gravity, which, by the way, is what got us to the moon.
I'm sorry, we never talked about the apple at all.
We had the apple, and we have what Mike just talked about. So Mike goes first, and
All right. Okay. I tell you what. Hangover.
Apple.
The moon. Oh. Now the apple.
Okay.
Yes.
Or do you want it opposite?
No, do the moon. Do the apple. Okay. The apple's important.
Apple.
So there's a lot of the story goes that Newton is sitting in the garden contemplating the universe, and the apple falls and hits him on the head while the moon is up. Yes, and so he sees the moon, gets hit in the head, he makes the connection. However, though, that is the whole bonking on the head, though.
I don't understand the connection with why the moon has to be up.
Oh, we'll get there.
Okay.
So there's actually a few different versions of the story because it happens in different places. There was a whole debate whether or not it was true or not. The story actually originates from his niece because at the end of his life, he was being taken care of by his niece and her husband, and he basically recounted this.
He told
the story to a poet. I can't remember the poet's name, but it was then put in. Poetry.
They have poetic license. Yeah,
and he only told the story four times in his old age. That was it.
Right. And so the story that was told was that he was actually in the garden enjoying a cup of tea. He saw an apple fall. And so that, you know, back in the earlier days of Newton, that why does it fall straight fucking down? I don't understand. Why does it not go sideways? Mm-hmm. And that type of thing. But also, the moon is in the distance. And he realizes that the same thing that makes the apple fall is what makes the moon act the way it does.
Ooh. That's a big leap for seeing an apple fall in the garden. Right. What kind of tea is it?
It's a leap of Newton.
It's Newtonian physics.
Because at the time, what is on Earth is terrestrial. What is in the heavens is the realm of the gods.
Heavenly.
Is heavenly. And so to make that connection, it connected us to the universe. I mean, it is the theory of gravity. Newton's theory of gravity.
There's weight behind that statement.
connects us to the universe in a way that nobody really quite understood until Newton.
Why didn't anybody before think of it?
In fact, there were people that were so against it that they called Newton's theory of gravity satanic.
Yes, of course they did. Because
they did not like the idea. Because the way Newton describes the universe is that gravity is instantaneous. It affects everything instantaneously. And they didn't like that. That was satanic. Well, and so, and so he was attacked.
You want everything to be instant these days, so.
Right, but the apple, if it's true, was the connection, was the realization that what pulls the apple down actually affects the moon as well. So the question then becomes, why does the moon not fall onto the earth?
Yeah.
And that's because it's going that way. It's going to the side.
Right.
It has a velocity to the side, right, which keeps it in orbit.
So he was not hit on the head by the apple.
No.
Now, so
I mean, he might have been hit by, in the head by an apple, but probably wasn't that day.
So we hear on the podcast, we love the idea of when the discovery is made, there's one person on the planet that knows of its existence. And that means it's possible that there's one entity in existence of the entire universe that knows of its existence. Mm-hmm. And in Galileo's case, there were billions of people probably that existed before him. And he was the first one to write down why an apple falls straight down, why the moon does not hit the earth.
You mean the...
You said Galileo, yeah.
Well, I you know, there were
three souls, right? But, you know, with Galileo, he was the,
for a moment,
he was the only one who knew Jupiter had some moons.
For that moment.
For that moment.
But not only did Newton understand gravity.
He sat on calculus for 20 years.
He sat on it. He didn't announce.
I will keep this to myself for now.
It sounds like you should say Ricky Bobby after that, but yeah.
I'll tell you what, let's get to the hangover.
Oh, it's so many good things to talk about.
Because I have a 3 o'clock deadline.
You do, yes. You do. All right. You're leading this, so you gotta close it out.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. We're going to take a break in 2 weeks, so we will see you on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, right before 2024.
Yeah, that's good. I'll go with that.
Which will either be a good year or a terrible year.
We'll find out.
Unless Brandon wants to run the show in 2 weeks, then you know.
I think I'll be in Mexico.
So. Yeah,
right. Well, it'll be a high in the sky for January.
Yeah, so I think everybody here is traveling. So I do want to say happy holidays to everybody. Whether you celebrate Christmas or not, I hope you have a great Christmas. We're going to see you on New Year's Eve. So join us then for a January 2024 high in the sky.
Woo.
So stay safe, stay healthy. We'll see everybody in 4 weeks. Cheers, everybody.